Hi, Newstalk's Ciara Kelly here. There is something about summer that makes you want to refresh your home. And for many of us, that starts with the kitchen. It's where the morning coffee happens, where family life gathers, where friends always seem to end up. And after years of wear and tear, it might be time to give it the attention it deserves. So if you're thinking about a new kitchen, Tile Style is well worth a visit, because Tile Style doesn't just do tiles, they also design and supply beautiful kitchens, including the luxurious Porcelainosa kitchen collection. Think high quality, contemporary design, stunning finishes, clever storage, and a look that can completely transform your space. Their expert team can help you plan it all properly with advice and optional virtual design, so you can see how your new kitchen will come together before making any big decisions. And with Tile Style Summer Sale now on, offering exceptional value across the store, it's a brilliant time to start planning with tiles and finishes to perfectly complement your new kitchen. So if your summer plans include creating a kitchen that feels genuine special, start with Tile Style. Visit the Tile Style showroom in Ballymount to see full kitchen displays and finishes up close, or explore more at tilestyle.ie.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, it's a thing often commented on. People are at a gig, for example, but spend an inordinate amount of time looking at the stage through their phone. The digital age has given us a lot, but how much of real human experience has it robbed from us? Christine Rosen is the author of The Extinction of Experience, Reclaiming Our Humanity in a Digital World. Christine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
What do you think it's taken from us?
I think it's taken some of our really important and underappreciated human skills, by which I mean the things we've evolved over millions and millions of years to know about ourselves and others, how to read each other's facial expressions, how to use our hands as tools, both for writing and creating things, and how to understand our world through unfiltered perception of it, spending time in it rather than just getting information about it through our screens.
Yeah. But even at that, though, I suppose everybody, and pretty much most of the planet, has a phone, but we still have to go to work, we have to go out into the world. We're still having, to some degree, those human interactions.
We are, but we actually now have the opportunity in any moment in public space, whether we're at work or waiting for the bus, to remove ourselves mentally and emotionally. Even though we might physically be standing at the bus stop, we can emotionally be invested in someone we're talking to on our phone, rather than looking around at the people in public space with us. And this does, as we know through rates of road rage and just general civic anxiety and anger, it has eroded some of the civility in everyday life.
Yeah. And why is that, do you think? Why is it the civility particularly? Because it does seem to be a function of social media, or at least some certain social media platforms, that it enables almost like a monster to come out, that, you know, a version of oneself that you wouldn't display with real life people.
Yes, there are things like the online disinhibition effect. Basically, human nature is what it is, and the people who have created these platforms know how to exploit our attention, but that doesn't bring out the best in human nature. So we are, as a species now, vastly culturally impatient with one another, because we have been habituated to have things on demand, to drop out of a conversation instantaneously by swiping or tapping a screen. And so when we are forced into situations where we don't have that control, we become less tolerant of others.
Well, yeah. Also, it often strikes me that one thing it's eroded is having a three-dimensional view of other people. And that an awful lot of online discourse is just, I'm just going to, you know, if you're going to have a debate with someone, it's about a gotcha moment. And if I catch you out on one point, that actually erodes everything about you and any belief you might have.
Yes, these platforms reward moral grandstanding, which means that even a small disagreement about a minor thing, like how you park your car or what kinds of foods you like, people start engaging on moral terms. So it's not just that you're misguided or foolish, you're evil, you know, or you're a saint or a sinner. So it does exacerbate that, because it rewards the most extreme reactions, because that's what captures our attention. That's what keeps us coming back over and over. And although we know this about these platforms, we've so integrated both screens and mediating technologies throughout our everyday lives and brought them into our homes. The phone is the first thing some people reach for in the morning and the last thing they touch at night. And that has transformed how our sort of habits of mind and the way we view the world.
But the algorithms, and you know, you use the word reward there, the algorithms have an addictive nature to them. They're designed purposefully to make us come back for more.
Yes, you should think about your smartphone not as just this convenient device that is sort of the Swiss Army knife of your life, but also like a little tiny slot machine, because it is designed to just keep you picking up, touching it, looking at it, checking it. And those moments of interstitial time throughout your day, you actually need, your brain needs time to just unplug and rewind and just sort of daydream even. There's daydreaming, there's boredom, there are these human experiences, some of which are uncomfortable, but all of which are necessary for crafting and creating people of better character. I'll even use the word virtue here because it matters. I mean, the device is designed to keep you on it as much as possible, but our minds and our sociability and our civility require us to have some downtime away from those devices.
So we've become products.
We have. We are the users. We're called users. If you look at how Silicon Valley in particular describes people who are availing themselves of these technologies, we're not called individuals or people. We're called users for a reason.
Yeah. And so there's a knock-on effect there, is there? That not just is it perhaps eroding the fullness of our personalities, it erodes the way we discourse with each other, it erodes our politics, it erodes all sorts of things.
I think it does. And I think we're starting to wake up to those effects. Look, a lot of these technologies do incredible things for us. I couldn't do my job, for example, without it. But we embraced a wide range of mediating technologies in aspects of our life, our private lives, in art, in culture, in areas where actually we shouldn't be mediating our experience. Understanding, for example, what a musician or an artist wants you to see about their work requires humility. You go, you stand, you look at the painting. You go to the concert, you just listen, and you're part of, particularly in concerts, you're part of a group of people who are all attending to the music, not staring at it through their screens or posting, you know, selfies on social media.
Yeah. But the degree of it now is so widespread, it's so insidious that, you know, have we reached a point where the way we should think about it, the way people, we should think about the way people interact with their phones, it's something like an addiction.
It is. And I think this is why what I would encourage people to do is to, in every aspect of your life, defend the human. And that might sound hyperbolic, but I mean it. I mean, if there are moments where you don't have to put a screen between yourself and other people, do it. If there are times when you can have a conversation without mediating it through a technology or a social media platform, you should choose that, because that now has to be actively defended, actively chosen, because we have allowed, again, uncritically, unthinkingly, assuming these things would improve lives 100%, that we've invited all of this into our lives, and it's very hard to unwind some of it, but we can do it. We've done it in other aspects of use of technology in the past. So, but we have to be aware of how much we are relying on it. I tell my friends, go through a day, and when you have a free moment, when you're waiting for something, you're standing at a bus stop, don't pick up the phone. See how often you are reaching for it. You'll start to notice your reliance on it.
Mm. And you said we have done this in the past. We have kind of unwound our dependence on some technologies.
We have. Look, I think when we notice, particularly when we notice negative impacts on children, for example, you know, the debate over how bad television or video games was for kids, there were extremists on either end, but it did lead to a public discussion of what was useful and necessary and important, particularly when it comes to children. We are just starting to have that debate with regard to social media platforms' impact on kids. I think that's a healthy debate. But as adults, we also need to look at our own use and our own reliance and our own sense of a desire for on-demand everything. Because as you say, it affects our culture. It certainly has affected our politics in ways that I think most people would agree are not positive.
Yeah, indeed. Even though people on an individual level obviously should try their best to kind of mitigate their the use of these things, at the same time, are there like corporations and individuals who are responsible? They're the pushers.
Yes. I mean, I think here in the United States, for example, we are starting to see more effort at regulation and at the federal level to hold accountable the products that these companies create, particularly social media platforms that they know they have known for a long time have actively harmful effects for young people. You know, when it comes to what adults can choose to do, it is more of a buyer beware attitude. But there are, in Europe and in the US, a lot of efforts to regulate the architecture and design of some of these new technologies. We're seeing those debates already with artificial intelligence technologies. These are all really important because what we tend to see with new and early adoption of technologies, so they tend to target the most vulnerable people. You know, we want to give every old person a robot to monitor them and the kids should all have an AI chatbot friend. I would say no, we should actually, we should stop and ask questions about whether that is really an active good for our most vulnerable populations.
Yeah, but even apart from vulnerable people, I mean, you kind of alluded to yourself there a while ago that we assume as grown-up adults know we're fine. I'm not addicted to my Instagram account.
Right, it's not me, it's everybody else.
Exactly, but we're just as likely because the algorithm will work on our brain the same as everybody else's.
That's correct.
It's scary stuff. Christine, thanks very much for talking to us today. That's Christine Rosen there, author of The Extinction of Experience, Being Human in a Disembodied World.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.